welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. This is an interesting, I think you put it, from the front line show, in that this is an unedited, unrehearsed, barely prepared for podcast, because we had some difficulties with our podcast last week. And so we decided, instead of not publishing a podcast this week, of doing something a bit different and a bit experimental. And we're going to talk about human connection and the role of God in this time of crisis. The human connection is so important. So what we're doing is that you and I talked for, let our audience know, you and I talked for about 15 or 20 minutes about it.
Yep.
Then we called our friend Terry Hershey. Terry, what's up, buddy?
Charles, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. And I caught Terry at happy hour just before dinner. So I've got a pissed off Hershey right now.
Or maybe happy. Maybe it's been happy for the hour here.
Yeah, I'm happy. There's no worry about that. No, but it's right before, yeah, and then the dinner, because, as you know, I love ritual, and so cooking is a big deal for me. So, but it'll wait. I want to be on the front line here. What's up?
Thank you. That's great, Terry. I really appreciate it. So it seems to me that they're almost opposites. One is that we're missing some kind of, for a lot of people, some kind of get out of my faceness. I need some alone time. I need to be away. Well, you know, and that's when there's, as you talked about with your daughter, there's your daughter and two children and two roommates in a three bedroom house, a three bedroom condo.
Exactly. The only way they could buy a condo was to all band together. And normally it works out because they're all different lives, different kids are at school and they're all on different schedules. Now they're all off and they're all forced to be home. And that's just tearing them apart. They're just, oh my God, they're all on top of each other. Too many people in too tight a space.
So we got situations like that where we have folks that want to be able to get away. And then on the other hand, even those folks are longing for connection, for genuine connection with other people, and that we don't have connection other than just the two, three, four, or five people we're quarantined with, that we don't have any other people. And so there's this longing for a relationship. And as we were talking about the role of God, Terry brought up, and I'd like you to talk about it, Terry, that you were saying the role of God and the role of sort of religion, if you will, it's a very communal activity. I think we're missing that sense of community. So I think we need to talk about a couple of things about how can you find a moment of quiet in a restless place? And then how can you develop some sort of sense of community in this? So
when you're all isolated and self-quarantine.
Well, so the moment of quiet is interesting because the moment people want a moment of quiet, which is ironic, because as you know, for a living, for years, I've done retreats and lectures and speeches about how to slow down and let your soul catch up with your body. In other words, how to pay attention to yourself and how to embrace moments of solitude, silence, and replenishment, right?
Yes.
And for years, the number one thing people would say, they're overwhelmed. And everyone raises their hand at these endeavors and say they cannot wait for a time when they have space to be alone. They can't wait for a time when they have an opportunity simply for silence. And I say that only ironically, because now you have it. I want to connect with people, but the irony is it's not about the moment of silence. It's not about the space where we're able, where there's an emptiness. It's not about that, because The issue is the permission to embrace it for what it is without being afraid of it.
I feel like a kid in the dark. I feel like a kid who's all alone in the dark. I'm at home. I have no communal connections. I can't touch people. I can't have people over. I can't go to church. I can't do all these things that I find community and comfort in. And I'm all of a sudden a monk. I don't know how to be a monk.
Well, that's part of it. Yeah, I mean, that's slightly part of it, is because that we've said to people, you need to have moments of what we would call, let's just call it self-care. It's just for you. And yet we've not been given the permission to do that. And so I almost turn it on its head and say, let's at least learn some practices now that that's the case. But for starters, Paul, what I would say with anybody who said, I don't know how to do that, I would say, well, you start by just declaring that. I suck at this.
Right.
This isn't fun.
Right.
But the point is, you bring that self to the front there, and you say, okay, this is me now. And you know what? This me is still okay. But well, the point is, it's a learning experience about that. That's the learning experience that I'm able to. It's the same thing. Charlie, you did this. We talked about this before. When you did your experience where you had several days of nothing, no one, zero, right?
Right.
And you had to go through some times where you thought, just like Paul said, man, I don't know if I can do this. I'm not good at this. I wish, whatever. And we go through those periods.
So how do we suddenly teach people to be alone and to be monks? Well, all the wisdom that you guys talk about, Thomas Mertens of the world and stuff here, who, and you both look for solace in solitude. You try and find that quiet space and place. Not only isn't it quiet, but I don't know how to go just back to my house and find that.
Paul, I think Terry responded really well to the first step, and it's the same thing. It's the first step of the 12 steps. It's the first step to managing an unmanageable situation, and that is admitting our powerlessness.
Yes, right.
And that's what that's what you're getting at, right, Terry? Admitting our
I'm not only saying to admit my powerlessness. In other words, I give up my ego here. In other words, this is not something I have to. This is not a test or a contest. I don't have to shine or get an A.
Right.
In other words, the point is, life sucks right now, but it's better than the alternative. And so, okay, pause. Guess what? I'd rather it be something different, but I'm going to learn something here. I really am. I'm going to learn something here. And what's interesting is the opportunity to learn something is a powerful endeavor.
It certainly is, yeah.
But here's what's fascinating about this.
Okay.
That people say they can't wait to get back to, quote, normal.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, give me a break. Everybody who came to my events couldn't wait to get away from normal. Literally. Every single person. It was distracting. It was busy. It was hurried. There was traffic. There was crazy. There was noise. There was all kinds of stuff, and they kicked it off.
So either they weren't being real, they just wanted a moment of peace before they got back into what was comfortable and known, or my contention is they really don't know what to do with that space and place of aloneness. They're frightened to be alone. If
and
we don't
I
grow up being
to
alone.
You, I would say to you, the irony is that in the middle of something that is so unbelievably uncomfortable comes gifts that we had no idea were there.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're looking for. We're trying to find those moments.
Didn't have any idea those gifts were there. For example, I live on an island, so I'm already isolated in that sense. And we're house quarantined. If we need to go to the grocery, we can, but we're house quarantined. Now, as a personality style, that's not an issue for me per se. However, there are all kinds of ways that I can make connections. The last Sabbath moment I wrote this last week, which is my blog, I talked to a group of sheep around the corner.
Now, did you really? I read that.
Come
did
on.
Did you really? I mean, come on now. Did you really verbally speak with those sheep?
Yeah, because I walk by them every day. And so then there's two mamas that have twins, so there's four little babies there. So I talk to them out loud. There's nobody there, so it doesn't really matter how loud I talk. And they love the
really
love
do
the
talk. I mean, now literally, you.
I do. I talk out loud, and they love the sermon because I don't take an offering, so they don't care.
You don't.
You're not asking for goat's milk,
and you don't fleece that flock here. So
yeah, I don't fleece that congregation, but I have found I'm doing an e-course now that I've sent out to people who follow my thing. It's just available for free, so people, lots and lots and lots of people are doing it. And so the thing is that they're finding behaviors that they've always wished they could do that they hadn't done for much of their life.
What is that e-course? I want people to be able to get to that, Terry.
It's called The Power of Pause. And they go to terryhershey.com, The Power of Pause. And it's actually on my web. It's on my my website now. It's free for anybody who wants it, The Power of Pause. In other words, to your point, Paul, is that the e-course is about training me to find meaning and or some connection with myself in an environment that's unfamiliar to me.
Right. Because these times could best be described as not the power of pause, but the terror of pause. We've been all asked to pause, and we're terrified.
Yeah, but that's the irony to me, which is an important thing, is that we were taught, and that's why paradigms are a big deal to me. It's the way we see. We were taught to be terrified by it because we didn't see the power and the benefit in it. We didn't see the gifts.
Right.
And just like anything, just think of the terror that happens with certain relationships. Because we didn't see the gifts there. We didn't see what was going on there that really made us who we were as better people. And anybody who's done anything, I mean, it's not just the silence and the pausing, it's the suffering. People are terrified of suffering.
Yes.
They're terrified of that because we didn't see the benefit in it. And you see the Viktor Frankl, like you read, Charlie, or any of the people who realize, no, I just didn't realize that underneath all of that, there were some benefits that I can claim. That doesn't mean I have to like it, just because I like or don't like it doesn't mean it's good or not good for me.
Well, you're touching on the topic that you and Charlie addressed a couple of shows ago when we were just starting into this. We didn't see even how deep it was going to go. And the title alone created the largest outpouring of opens and clicks and likes that I've ever seen on anyone at Charlie's show. The title was Everything's Been Canceled But Hope.
Oh, interesting.
You know, something like to that effect, that hope is hope has not been canceled. And when we just put that title on it, and we posted out on social media, hundreds and hundreds of people, more than I ever seen in any of our shows, reached out and opened that and clicked on it and liked it and responded to it. And I can, I'm not just because it was good content, but that title spoke to people. That's what we're looking for, hope in this moment of desperation. Now, let me ask you the other question that I asked Charlie. I'm a good Catholic, so I go to Mass every day, every week for my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
The past 2 weeks, or the first time in my life, I didn't go to church. And I felt so weird about it. A ceremony, a habit I've had for 60-some years was broken. And that was odd. But what I thought is, what is the place of church right now? Church is normally a place I go to for comfort and guidance and community. We gather and I get out of myself and I realize there's a bigger world here. And we pray, we sing, we hold hands, we do things, and somehow that summons God for me. It's hard for me to summon God just sitting in my, like a monk, sitting in my house alone. I need some of that communal experience here. But the churches, in other past problems, like after 9/11, the church I went to suddenly had a special service and it was full. Everybody turned out. They didn't want to be alone. I owned a bar in those days. The bars were packed. because nobody wanted to be alone. Right now, we're supposed to figure this out and suffer through it alone, without any church and without any community. That's what I think makes it so unnerving.
Yeah, so I have two responses to that. One has to do with the sacrament. I'm Episcopalian, so I'm sacramental, too, in the way I express
right.
my faith.
Right.
And it has to do with, by that, for people who don't understand that, means having communion or Eucharist.
But, yes, right.
So the first thing I want to say to you is, there's a statement by a Catholic priest in the 1700s, John Cossade. He said, we need to embrace the sacrament of the present moment. Now, I love that. That's powerful. That's extraordinary. And so what I have discovered each day, even in the walking, like talking to the sheep or whatever, is how do you find the sacrament, which is the sacrament is simply grace, the presence of grace.
Right.
How do you find the sacrament in daily endeavors? So this, I've been inviting people with my Sabbath morning in other ways, is as you walk through the day, what are ways where we see not just hope, but grace alive and well? In other words, I want people to say, I had never noticed that before.
Yeah.
But that sacrament was actually here. And I talk about in my course, The Power of Pause, people are talking about the way they're praying, ways that they'd never prayed before, ways that they never, because of when they're just walking around and talking and the ordinary things they look at, where that sacrament is alive and well. And so I never noticed that, because I tell people that the ordinary is the hiding place of the holy.
Mm.
And while we go, what we want the bread and the wine and the community, and we get that, there are times throughout the history of humankind when that was not always available to people. And so we have to ask ourselves, where can we now turn our eyes to see that instant, ordinary moments where we may have missed it along the way?
Wow.
You know, Terry, I was just reading this morning in Thomas Merton, who said exactly the same you did. He said, and he was talking to monks, and he said, it is by living his life that the monk finds God. For wisdom is God himself living in us, revealing himself to us. Life reveals itself only life reveals itself to us only insofar as we live it. And so that is the power of the present moment. That is talking about, as you had said early on in this discussion, that we need to admit the situation we are in and live through it, and live through it with grace, knowing that it is a time that we have to admit is not ideal, but it is a time that we are, as you pointed out, we are, compared to many, many people in the world, we're in a better situation than many people, even in our worst situation. But,
And I think the other thing, too, I'll go back to Paul, but then I'll answer that, too. The other thing is having to do with community, how community is a powerful, powerful thing. It, just the reinforcement that no one of us are on this journey alone. We are connected, and so that's why communal endeavors are essential. But having said that, I have found that over the last 3 weeks, I mean, I write letters anyway, but I've written more. I'm talking about pen on paper with stamps,
Wow.
which is a communal endeavor.
Well, Terry, I haven't received one.
I have. Oh, okay.
It's so coming. It's in the mail.
The people whose addresses I have. But I have written letters. I mean, it's an interesting opportunity to ask. It's just like when something has been taken away from you, how do you find ways to experience that? I mean, this one of the fun things for me to watch are these choirs that do these songs, choirs and symphonies that do these songs virtually, or however it is. In other words, they're all in their house.
Right.
And somebody does it with Zoom. And
well, I haven't seen that. They're doing choral groups.
They've been doing that for a while. Everybody's like on Zoom, and so they're all singing together or all playing together, but they're physically actually all in different cities around the world, different locations around the world. They come together online.
Yeah, and to that point is they're finding ways to do that exact thing, Paul, which is to remind us that we are connected.
Is online enough? Or are we going to test online and take it places we never... Online was just sort of an easy way to connect. And then you could see them, and it was a little video conference
or
something.
For the people in what we used to call the Dark Ages, who had to go through some pandemics that were 100 times worse than this,
right?
They didn't even have online.
No, they were really alone.
They were completely isolated.
Did we learn anything from that? Anybody write about that? Anybody talk about it? Or did we just? I thought it was interesting. I'll give you a comparison. I read about the 1918 flu, which most Americans didn't even know existed, killed, I think it was 20 million people around the world. It killed 600,000 people in the United States.
And it was a big deal.
And after it was over, this historian said, no one ever talked about it again. It was like they just wanted to forget and move on. We didn't learn anything from that.
That's unfortunate to me. And I hope that doesn't happen with this, because it shows you how vulnerable we are as people, but it shows you what we can be grateful for, too. I mean, that's the whole point about connection, is having to do with our gratitude. I think what we miss with our psyche is how much sufficiency we have deep down to do things, even though it sucks. I mean, there are people in the world who literally have very little. I mean, Charlie, you do this, you see this all the time when you go in Uganda. I mean, to live day to day.
They're living day to day in the rural villages, is they have just a surprising contentment with that. You know, they struggle.
That's about the paradigm. It's not just being cheerful for cheerful sake. They have found a sufficiency in their core where they have noted how to make connections where they can, how to find gratitude where they can, how to find the sacred in the present moment where they can.
Well, with them, talk about the sacred in the present moment, there is no tomorrow. There is no such thing as tomorrow. There is only a continual today.
Yeah, that's actually good. I like Confucius, the statement I posted today, that we all have two lives, and but our life begins only when we realize that we have one.
Hmm.
I mean, just like them. Okay, so I only have today. That's actually good. Whew. I can breathe easier. I've just got today. I like that.
Yeah.
I was reading, you were asking at the very beginning about God, and I know that we're not going to do a long one today, but very beginning about God, and I was reading, N.T. Wright wrote a thing recently about that, you know, why is, because he said, well, God's not in the answer-giving business, for starters. And he said, do any of you read the Psalms?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The Psalms.
It's great.
You have caused friend and neighbor to shun me. My companions are in darkness. Okay, and we think we have it bad.
Yeah,
that's the
Psalms. The Psalms of Lament are just...
And guess what? It doesn't end on a happy note after that.
Every story has to have a happy... Every story has to have a happy ending.
The point, though, Terry, that we really need to think about is God is not in the answer-giving business.
God is in the lamenting with his people business. God is in... You lament, I lament. That's the God. God is, don't worry, while you're lamenting, I will lament with you. Your lament is not unheard.
It's called the long-suffering God.
I love that, yeah.
That I suffer with you. And so perhaps that's a consolation for many people, in that they can, that maybe perhaps if people can get there emotionally, that God is suffering with you at this time. And this is, it's not something that necessarily God has ordained, but he is with us in this suffering. And then even in the feeling of distance from him helps create, like, the feeling of distance from people and our desire for connection. If we have a distance feeling from God, we have a greater sense of desire to connect with God.
What was your Thomas Merton quote you gave me earlier, Charlie, about God?
Oh, Thomas Merton was just referring to, this was the monkish life. I don't know that it really applies to us, but that there are times that God may distance himself in order to build our faith. But I don't think that's, we're in that kind of time right now. I think that's for the monks in their solitude. I don't think that that's a thing we're facing right now. I don't think God has distanced himself. I think he is fully present, as it's always shown through our Holy Writ, that he is with us in suffering and agony, and does not, and with his mercy and grace, does not abandon us.
I would suggest, though, some of us feel like we have been abandoned or have nowhere to turn. Where's God in this moment?
And perhaps that is a time, like Merton said, that this is a time to incorporate your faith that you've had for 60-something years and to say it looks different now. I really like what Terry began with, and that is that we need to give ourselves permission to acknowledge that we're in a very awkward and uncomfortable state, and we need to look for new realities, new ways of, not necessarily new realities, but new ways of confronting reality.
And sacrament in the ordinary, that's what I heard. You know, if I can't go to the regular sacrament that I need, that evokes a feeling of not just community, but connection with God, then I've got to somehow find other ways in the ordinary to find that sacred moment, that grace,
yeah,
that connection.
It was a great poem by a minister called Pandemic, and in it she talked about the fact that all the things are shut down. But in Wuhan, China, they said for the first time now in years, they can actually hear the birds sing. In other words,
really?
They have found a sack. Yeah.
Because of the quarantine and the solitude?
Because the noise has been shut down completely.
Right, right.
In other words, they have found something they didn't realize was there all along, which is what a sacrament is all about. I recommend and it's not just for Catholics, but I recommend reading what Pope Francis's speech they just gave this week, which is about Mark 4, and it's about Mark chapter 4, which is about the disciples with Jesus who they were afraid because of the storm.
Yeah.
And, you know,
locked in a room, fearing the world outside them.
No, the storm.
Oh, okay.
Right. On the boat.
Oh, on the boat.
The boat.
Yeah, right.
Why are you afraid? But same diff. Why are you afraid? Have you no faith? But he's not shaming them for it. He's just saying, he's basically saying, you have no idea what's inside of you to trust. And basically, he's saying that I'm here to help you trust that.
Yes, this really tests the passage of Jesus in, I believe it's in John 14, Terry, that says, peace I give to you, not as the world gives, but I give you a whole different kind of peace.
Yeah.
It's in the Gospel of John somewhere.
Well, I need a whole new kind of peace if I'm... All of a sudden, I'm at home, and I'm alone, and I'm cut off from my community, and I'm faced with fear and uncertainty for something I've never seen or dealt with before, and I have to do it on my own. I can't go to the hugs and communal comfort that usually guides me through these things.
Well, I think we can... Go ahead, Terry. Go ahead before I wrap it up. Go ahead.
No, but I'm saying... Absolutely, and at some time in our life, that will be the case, and that will be the way we introduce it. I've not experienced this, and my normal ways of finding something to affirm both me and or the life I live, they are gone and or absent.
Right.
And at that point, there will be glimmers if we give ourselves the permission, there will be glimmers that all of those things that we have experienced over the years have been investing themselves inside of us, and they are there at our beckon.
Yes.
Through memories. They are there at our beckon, and we're lucky through shout-outs verbally. They are there at our beckon through ways that we do prayers that we learn. They are there at our beckon when we pass by flocks of sheep down the road and we chat with them in ways that we would have to give ourselves a sense of humor. They are there at our beckon, so that's there.
It takes a calamity in order for us to change, as you like the word, as I do, it takes a calamity to change our paradigm. It takes some sort of difficult situation to change paradigm, because we're so comfortable in our paradigms. And our paradigms, you know, how many people have heard your lecture and felt this sense for this solitude and this pause, but not really feeling it like they're feeling it now, like they're feeling, I want a greater connectivity with myself. I want a greater connectivity with God. And I ideally want a greater connectivity with some kind of human relations, which are very difficult at this point.
Right.
But now we are stressed to a point of having to experiment with alternative methodologies such as the power of pause.
Correct. Amen.
So do you guys have anything you want to add before I wrap it up?
I've just learned that there is power in the pause, not just terror in the silence.
Correct. That's actually a good way to say it.
Yeah. And you know, we really didn't talk about the ability. We just kind of alluded to the ability to do connectivity. I know Terry and I wrote for years snail mail letters, and when you receive a handwritten letter from somebody, or even a typed letter, I think we typed them, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, but even if you see it with a stamp on it and you get it and you get to read it, there's something very personable and something very connective in that. So I would encourage you to write letters to your loved ones. And you know, it's something that most people know that my family does at special times of the year, like at Christmas and birthdays, and certain times my son and my wife and I and my new daughter-in-law, we write letters to each other. So we'll each write three letters of how we feel about each other. And they are, like at Christmas time or at a birthday time, they're the most important gift. No matter how expensive or how cool the gift was, the most special thing we look for are our letters from one another. And that's something we can continue to do now, is letters to one another. We can make phone calls. I'm starting to make, believe me, I'm not a phone person, and I'm starting to make two or three phone calls a day, just calling friends, old friends, and just saying, how you doing? And it just, you know, guys, it's a wonderful way to connect with these people that I haven't connected with for so long. And they are so happy to hear from me, which they might not always be. But now they're just so happy to hear from somebody. And we just talk about life, have a few laughs, and talk about the situation and talk about each other. And we really don't focus so much on the VOLCA situation here that we didn't get to talk about, of vulnerability, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity, which is what we're all facing right now. And it's a major movement in the business world. But we don't talk about that. We just talk about old times, good times, you know, our friendships, our relationships. We're encouraging one another. Those are just incredible phone calls.
Because you're talking.
Terry and I check in daily, and I listen to him talking to sheep.
Do you know how many people never use a phone, though, anymore? Talking is so old-fashioned. Give it to me in a snippet.
Well,
give it to me in a text.
Can't be now, Paul.
No, I'm saying, right? Would you be shocked to hear if I admitted that in my entire 64 years on this planet, I've never written one letter to anybody, ever?
No.
This is a good year. This is a good year to start.
Yeah, I like that.
It's a good year to start.
I like that.
So I would suggest, in wrapping our time up here together, three things. One is, I like this, writing letters. Terry, I think that's a brilliant idea. And if it's not letters for you and it's not letters for me, then it's emails. But it's a heart rendering email that's expressing love and concern and care. I think you can do it by email. It's always nice to get the snail mail stamp letter and open it up and do that. That's always wonderful. But for those that don't have the wherewithal for that or the desire for that, email certainly will suffice. Secondly, is that we can make phone calls and experiment with virtual meetings and virtual conversations. Like Paul and I are on Skype right now, and we can see each other. There is something about seeing another person as you're talking. So you can use Skype, Zoom. Microsoft has a meeting software. There are just several softwares that you can use that are all free. And thirdly, and I really want to encourage everybody, I will put it on the show notes and it will be published tonight. It will be on iTunes tonight and it will be on my website tomorrow. Terry's e-course, The Power of Pause, that is very tangible, very practical, and is a perfect course for this. And you find it at terryhershey.com. And I will see that, talk to Terry about publishing this on his website so he can encourage people there. Guys, you have anything to add before we wrap up?
I feel a sigh of relief just talking about it. I think that's something that's missing. We don't talk enough about these things.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about letter writing, Paul, is it like a journal entry, as I tell people, just to go ahead and say it out loud. Because saying it out loud is a powerful thing. And so I give people the permission at the end of the day, just to say, here's one thing I noticed today that made me smile. Here's one thing I noticed today that gave me joy. It's the sacrament of the present moment thing.
Right.
And if people are God people, here's one place where I saw God today that I never saw it before when I was just so focused on traffic and getting somewhere.
I want to wrap it up with that statement, Terry. I think that's really good. I want to thank everybody for listening to us. And I appreciate your bearing with us in our very ad lib, last minute, sort of unedited version that Paul is going to pack this up and send it to me, and I'll send it out tonight, and you will get it late tonight on iTunes and tomorrow on my website at thenextchapter.life, L-I-F-E. And as always, this is Charlie Hedges signing off for now. See you later. Bye.